Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to come. As people are filtering in, we're going to start the program this morning. I want to take a moment to thank everybody for coming. This is a program which actually is a year in the making. I'll tell you why. Because a year ago, somebody emailed me in Elul Taf Shin Pei Aleph and said, "Rabbi, do we need to organize signing the Prizbol?" And I said, "You're absolutely right, but we need to do it at the end of Shemitah, not the beginning of Shemitah." So at that point in time, I reached out to Rabbi Reese, and I said, "Rabbi Reese, I'd like to book a date now for the end of Taf Shin Pei Beis that we can start learning about the Prizbol and appreciating, because once in every 7 years, we need to think about these issues." And so Rabbi Reese very graciously gave us time and gave us a date when he'd be here in town to be with us. I'd like to, first of all, thank today's sponsors, for Debbie and Saul, who are sponsoring today's event. And it is in honor of the Yahrzeit of Debbie's father, Mr. Eli Akrichi, Eliyahu Ben Moshe, Nishmosa Aiden, a very fine and wonderful, radiant human being whose influence continues in his children and grandchildren, Be'ezra Hashem, great-grandchildren, the right time. We also want to thank Ephraim and Simi Diamond, who are sponsoring this morning's program in honor of Ephraim's grandfather's yahrzeit, David Ben Rav Baruch Bendit, Olav HaShalom. And it's a special connection because I know when I reached out to Ephraim, is the Diamonds spend time with Rabbi Reese in Wisconsin around Pesach time. This is a natural connection to be able to appreciate. And I want to thank Bruce and Automail, who are sponsoring just because they're sponsoring and appreciating this program. We are very, very privileged. I don't think people appreciate how lucky we are to have Rabbi Reese with us this morning. Rabbi Reese currently is the Av Beis Din of the CRC, the Chicago Rabbinic Council, and the Skan Av Beis Din of the Beis Din of America. He also serves as a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Elkanan, that's Reitz, of Yeshiva University. He is a graduate of Yale Law School, where he served as a senior editor of the Yale Law Journal. He also worked as an associate for 6 years in the firm Cleary Gottlieb Steen & Hamilton, and he served previously when I had the privilege of working with Rabbi Reese as a gabbai, when Rabbi Reese was the dean of Reitz and a mentor of mine in many, 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 many ways. Rabbi Reese is a member of the editorial board of Tradition and has published articles in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Law Journal. Rabbi Reese is one of the most erudite Talmidei Chachamim of this generation, who is able to translate the most complex of ideas into the most simplest of terms in spheres of finance, in spheres of halacha, in spheres of damages and property in Yoredan, in all aspects of halacha. It is a tremendous privilege to welcome Rabbi Reese to our base classes, to our Shul B'Chabad Rav. As our Reese starts, I'm going to hand out copies of the Prizbol, which the Beis Din of America has produced under Rabbi Reese, and we can look at them as we go through it.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Trump. I really appreciate that warm introduction. It's a privilege to have gotten to know Rabbi Trump for all of these years. We still have a movement in Chicago where Rabbi Trump spent a number of years learning, which is called Trump for President, where we all feel that he should really be in that position based on his qualifications. As Rabbi Trump mentioned, this is a Shemitah year, a Tav Shin Pei Beis, and every 7 years that there is a Shemitah year. So at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, there is something which is known as a Shemitas Ksafim. Shemitas Ksafim means the cancellation of all loans that have been extended from one Jew to another Jew. The Torah tells us, Mikesa Sheva Shanim Taseh Shemitah, that at the end, Mikes is a lashon of ending. It means at the end of every 7 year period, you have to make this a Shemitah thing. So we always refer to Shemitah as Shnasa Shemitah, the time in which we do not work the land in Eretz Yisrael. That's how we know the term Shemitah. But the Torah itself uses the term Shviyis. Ve'ashviyis tishmitenu netashta. That on the seventh year, the Shviyis, that's when you're supposed to leave the land alone and not work the land in Israel. And when we speak about the land resting, we don't say that the land is going to do a Shemitah. We say B'Shabbosah Haaretz, that the land's going to observe Shabbos. That's why the famous story of the Panva Jerob, when he would go to an orchard during the year of Shemitah, so he would go over to the tree and he would say, "Good Shabbos." to the tree because the tree was resting. So that's referring to the resting of the land. But when the Torah uses the term Shemitah, that word Shemitah means release. So it means that you're supposed to release something. So what is it that you release? So you release any debts. Any debts, there's a cancellation, call it an amnesty. There's a cancellation of debts that had been extended. If the debt had not been paid up yet by the end of the Shemitah year, so then it becomes canceled. There's a dispute between the Sefer HaYireim and everybody else, pretty much, as to whether this the loan only becomes canceled if the lender affirmatively says that he's canceling the loan. The way that the Torah phrases the obligation is "Vized Var Hashmitah Shamot Kol Ba Mashe Yado Asher Yashev Bereyehu." That there is, this is a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh that we just read a couple of weeks ago. That there is an obligation for the person who's the lender to be shamot, to release the loan. So the Sefer Yireim says that means that if the lender never says mishamet ani, he never says I hereby release the loan, so then the loan is not considered to be released and the loan is still extended. It must still be paid. However, all of the other Rishonim and the Minchas Chinuch write that it's an afkata demalka, that the Torah says that at the end of the seven-year period, there's going to be a Shemitah, there's going to be a cancellation of loans. That even if the lender says, I want to collect the loan, pay me up the loan, it doesn't matter. The borrower can say, sorry, Charlie, the loan has been canceled by the Torah by the end of the Shemitah year, and therefore I do not have to pay back the loan. So what then is this affirmative obligation that is incumbent upon each lender of Shamot? So the Mishnayos in Masechus Shavuos say, "Bezed Devar HaShemitah," it means that there's a dibur, that a person is supposed to enunciate. Let's say that the borrower comes to the lender after the end of the Shemitah year, and the borrower says, "I hereby am prepared to repay the loan." That's considered to be a laudable thing. The Mishnah says that the borrower wants to repay the loan anyway. That's considered to be laudable. You're not supposed to take advantage necessarily of a cancellation of a loan. Or you owed some money, and it's the right thing to fess up and to say, I'm going to try to pay back the money, even though I don't have to. So then the dibur, the obligation upon the lender is to say, Meshamet ani. He's obligated to say, he or she is obligated to say, Meshamet ani, I hereby am releasing you from the loan. Even though it's already been canceled, but it's supposed to be verbalized by the lender. That's the mitzvah of Shemot, that the lender is supposed to verbalize the cancellation, even if the borrower wants to pay back anyway. It happens that there's a whole procedure, there's like a script that is outlined in the Gemara, that after the lender says, Meshamet ani, I am canceling or I am affirming the cancellation of the loan, the borrower is really supposed to say at that point in time, Afa pikein, nonetheless, I still want to give you the money as a matana. I'm going to give it to you as a gift anyway. So that's really what the borrower is supposed to do. There's a story that the Gemara tells where there was such a dialogue that took place between Abba Bar Binyomi and Rabba. Abba Bar Binyomi owed money to Rabba, and it was at the end of the Shemitah year, so the loan had been canceled. So then Abba Bar Binyomi, he was an ethical, honest fellow, so he came in front of Rabba at the end of the Shemitah year, and he said, I want to pay you back anyway. That's a laudable thing to do. Very fine. So Rabba followed the halacha, because after all, that's the mitzvah in the Torah. Thank you. He said, Meshamet ani, I'm hereby canceling the loan. And Abba Bar Binyomi said, wow, that's so nice of you. Okay, and he walked away. So Rabba got really upset that he didn't get the memo. He didn't understand that he was supposed to say Apo Pikate. So somebody else went along to Abba Bar Binyomi, and he told him that you messed up over here, and you're supposed to Abaye went over and said, your Rabba is really upset, so Abba, you were supposed to say Afo Pikate, I want to pay you anyway. So Abba Bar Binyomi went back to Rabba and he said, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. He said Afo Pikate, but Rabba was not happy about it at all. He said, lo haba beidaita behait sober meribana meikara, this person did not have any kind of basic understanding of the halacha. It led to some bad feelings. So that's the basic positive mitzvah of Shamot, So the Torah goes on to say there's also a negative commandment of lo yigos esrei'eihu, that the lender is not allowed to go after the borrower, certainly at the end of the Shemitah year, in order to collect the debt. It's not allowed to pester or badger the borrower for the money, even if the lender knows that the borrower has billions of dollars. So there wouldn't normally be a violation of a person claiming a loan, wanting to get a loan. Normally, you're not allowed to badger or pester a borrower if he doesn't have any money. But if the borrower has money, you're allowed to go after the borrower. So in this particular case, we say, no, it's not allowed because you can't, the Shemitah had canceled the loan. And then there's a third prohibition, which is Hisham Lacha Penyed Davam Limbav Chavliya Lemor Kavosh Nasa Shevosh Nasa Shmita Vrayin Chavachicha Evyon Vositelo, that a lender will refrain from extending a loan to a borrower towards the end of the Shmita cycle, because the lender will say, I'm afraid that I'm not going to get paid back because it's so close to the end of the Shmita cycle. If I extend the loan, there's a mitzvah of Gemilas Chasadim that you're supposed to extend loans to people who are in need. So the lender will say, I'm not going to extend the loan because I'm afraid I'm not going to get paid back because the Shemitah year will cancel the loan. So that's also a prohibition in the Torah. So the Gemara in Gittin says that nowadays, Shemitah's Ksafim, this cancellation of loans, is not really a Torah obligation anymore. Why is it not a Torah obligation? We understand that if it relates to the Karka, the land of Israel, so maybe if the mitzvah of Shemitah, of what we call Shemitah, the resting of the land, Meshav Saharit, so if that nowadays is not Mina Torah, that happens not to be a Torah obligation nowadays, so maybe other mitzvahs that relate to a Shemitah that have to do with the resting of the land, so those would also not be from the Torah. But this doesn't have to do with the resting of the land. This is a Chobas Haguf. This is like putting on tefillin. This is a monetary obligation. It has nothing to do with working the land or anything of that sort. It's like the mitzvah of paying workers on time. So what does this have to do with the resting of the land? Why should it only be midrabanan? So there's a machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Rebbe says that we draw a juxtaposition between two different phrases in the pasuk. It says, "V'zeh dvar hashmita shamot." This is the nature of Shemitah, Shamot. So that's a double terminology. It says Shemitah and Shamot. Why doesn't it just say the word in one form and one time? Why are there two words that basically sound like they're saying the same thing? So Rebbe says, so we learn from here that Bisman she'atam mishamit karka, atam mishamit kisafim. Bisman she'iyatam mishamit karka, iyatam mishamit kisafim. That when there is a Shemitah of the land, on a Torah level, so then there's a Shemitah of loans as well on a Torah level, a cancellation of the loans. But when you don't have a Shemitah of the land on a Torah level, you don't have a Shemitah of the loans. So you might say, so this is referring to Shemitah, keeping a Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, leaving the land fallow. So we have to check and see if that's the Raisa Drabbanan. Yeah, that's one way of reading it, but that's not the way Tosfos reads it or the Rambam reads it. The Rambam, Tosfos and the Rambam say, then what is the Shemitah Sakarka? The Shemitah Sakarka has nothing to do with the Shemitah trip to Eretz Yisrael and seeing how they observe Shemitah nowadays. It has to do with Yovel. It has to do with Yovel because Shemitah means release. So you don't release anything when you're leaving the land quiet and you have the land rest on the Shemitah year. Releasing is what you do in Yovel. Yovel, if a person had acquired somebody else's Steyachusa, if I had acquired somebody else's ancestral land, during the Yovel cycle. So then when the Yovel year comes along, it has to be returned. Right? And all of the land is returned to every single person from who had originally owned the land. They get the ancestral land back during the Yovel year. So that is what we mean when we say that that Shemitah Hakarka is not observed nowadays. It means Yovel is not observed nowadays. So why is it that Yovel is not observed nowadays? Because the Torah says that to cross them dror ba'aris l'chol yoshevah, that Yovel means that you proclaim liberty throughout the land, right? That's what it says on the Liberty Bell. It's a quotation from Parshas Behar that speaks about Yovel, proclaim liberty throughout the land for all of its inhabitants, l'chol yoshevah. So bisman shechol yoshveh aleh, v'lo bisman shegolam mitzasan. So Yovel is only observed in Israel when the entirety of the Jewish people are living in Israel. The entirety? It's hard to get everybody in one place. You know, let's say one straggler doesn't come, so that means you're not going to observe Yovel. So we say rubo kikulo. You have the majority. That would be good enough. So nowadays, we don't have the majority of Jews living in Israel. We're getting pretty close. If everybody, you know, from the shul would move over, so maybe it would, you know, put us over the top. We're already at around 47-48% or so. And so that's the question. So when we reach 50.1%, does that mean that Yovel is going to be observed again? In which case, Shemitah's Ksafim, the cancellation of loans, will also be observed from a Torah level, on a Torah level. So that's a question mark. The Gemara in Erechin says that in addition to the fact that you need the majority of people on the land, if you had the majority of Jews in the land of Israel, but nobody knew where to go, the tribes, everyone, we have 12 different tribes, and each of the tribes are supposed to be in designated portions of the land, not supposed to be mixed up and all in one big mishmash with each other. So, Shevet Binyamin B'Yehuda, V'Shevet Yehuda B'Binyamin, Yehei Yovel Noeg. If the people from the tribe of Yehuda are in the territory belonging to Binyamin, and the people in the tribe of Binyamin are in the territory belonging to Yehuda, so you might think that the Yovel will be observed. Tamalom l'cho yoshver. So it says, L'bizman sheyoshver ki tikunan v'lo bizman shehen mirubin. It's only when the Shvatim, everybody knows what Shevet they're from. I know what Shevet I'm from. I'm a Kohen. But most people don't know what Shevet they're from. So it's only when everybody knows what Shevet they're from and where they're supposed to be situated. Otherwise, even then, the Chazon Ish says, based on this Gemara, we still wouldn't observe Yovel on a Torah level. So most of the poskim assume, Rabbam Shulchan Aruch, assume that Shemitah nowadays is only Midrabanan. I have Shemitah nowadays is only Rabbinic. Shemitah nowadays is only Rabbinic. So why then do we observe Shemitah's Ksafim? So the Gemara says that the Chachamim instituted Shemitah's Ksafim as a Zecher L'Shvius, because people might forget how Shemitah is supposed to be observed, that there's supposed to be a cancellation of loans. So therefore, they utilized the mechanism of their authority to enact that there's going to be a cancellation of loans, even though according to Torah law, nowadays, there really wouldn't be a cancellation of loans because we don't have Yovel, but they exercised their authority. What's the authority based upon? So that's a machlokus between Abaye and Rava. Abaye says because the Chachamim can uproot something, that there would be an obligation to repay the loan, but that Yesh Koch B'Yad Chachamim L'Akva Dovim Min HaTorah B'Sheh Be'Al Taseh. If they're just saying don't do something, they're not saying go out and perform an act that would be an avera. They're saying just don't do something that you otherwise would be obligated to do. They have the power to do that. So therefore, they say to the borrower, you would be obligated to pay, but just don't pay. So they have the ability to do that. And Rava says it's based on the principle of hefker bezdin hefker, that they can cause a person to relinquish ownership of something. So they say to the lender, you really are entitled to this money, but we're going to relinquish your ownership of this money that you're not going to be entitled to be paid anymore, hefker bezdin hefker. So that explains why Shemitah's Ksafim is observed nowadays. So Hillel saw, there's a bit of a problem. We're observing Shemitah's Ksafim, even if it's only observed rabbinically nowadays, but there's a problem because the Torah says that a lender is not allowed to refrain from extending a loan, as we mentioned, based on a fear that the loan is going to be canceled. So he saw that this is Hillel HaZaked, saw that there were lenders who are potential lenders who are refraining from extending loans because they were afraid that the loan would be canceled. So he said, I have to do something about this, so I'm going to make a prosbul. So that's what the Gemara says, because of Tikkun HaOlam, in order to address this societal problem, so Hillel established a prosbul. The prosbul was this magic potion. We'll have to figure out what a prosbul is. A magic potion said, prosbul, and suddenly all the loans can be collected by the lenders. So what's this idea that Hillel took this prohibition? So even if nowadays it's only a rabbinic prohibition to collect the loan, and says, no, if the lenders make a prosbul, so then they'll be allowed to collect the loan. How in the world does that work? So the Gemara explains, since the cancellation of the loan nowadays is only rabbinic in nature, so therefore Hillel could come up with some sort of a rabbinic device to do away with that and to say that if there's a prosbul, so then we're going to allow for the loans to be collected. So the idea of the prusbul works as follows. The Gemara tells us, "Ehu gufo shel prusbul." The prusbul is mosreini lachem ploni dayanim shememakom ploni, that the lender gets up in front of a bezdin and he says, "I am giving over to you dayanim shekochov sheishli etzel ploni shegbenon kos man sheeretsa." That any loans that are outstanding and that are owed to me by various borrowers, you can have one prusbul and it covers all the borrowers, all the debt that's owed to a person. That I will have the right to, I will have the right to collect this whenever I want. And the dayanim sign on the bottom, or the witnesses sign on the bottom of the document. The way that the Gemara is sort of understood by, I would say, most commentators when it says the witnesses, is that it means that you go in front of three judges and you make this declaration as a lender in front of these three judges, and there are a bunch of people sitting around in the room. And the judges don't have time to sign every single document, so you go to the two people who are sitting in the back of the room with you and you say, "You saw me make this declaration in front of the dayanim. Can you sign on the dotted line that you saw me make the declaration in front of the dayanim as two witnesses?" And the two witnesses sign. Fine. So that's how the proof. Why does that work? How does it help? So I gave over the. So I said to the dayanim, I'm handing over to the bezdin my loan. So why then am I allowed to collect them? So this is based on a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Masechta Shavuos that talks about Mosir Shtaros of the bezdin. If you have a lender, and a lender has loan documents that evidence a loan that was made to a borrower, to multiple borrowers. The lender has loan documents, promissory notes, and the like. If the lender takes those physical promissory notes, and gives it over to the bezdin, so then there is no cancellation of the loan at the end of the Shemitah year. It sounds like, according to most commentators, this would be true even on a Torah level. Even on a Torah level, that this would work. Why does it work? Because once the loan documents are handed over to the lender, so then you no longer have the application of what the Torah says, Esachicha tashmet yadecha. The Torah says that when do you have to cancel a loan? If it's a loan between two private citizens. But if the lender, the one who has the ability to collect, is not a private citizen, but is the rabbinical court, that's not a chicha anymore. So now it's the rabbinical court that is holding the loan documents. So it's the rabbinical court that is the official assignee, so to speak, the one who has received an assignment of the loans. So the collection of the loan by the original lender is really that person serving as an agent of the bezdin, similar to what we have with respect to the resting of the land. You can't work the land, but if you're doing so as an agent of the bezdin, you're not working your land in order for it to be your land, but you're doing it as part of an otzer bezdin process. Some people in this room might have heard of that. So then you have the ability to do some more work in the land that you might have had the right to otherwise, and to sell the fruit in a way that you might not have been able to do otherwise, even though you're the one doing it. So it's the same thing over here. The loan documents have been handed over to the bezdin, so therefore, when the lender collects, they're really collecting as an agent of the bezdin on some level. Another explanation as to why it works is because since the bezdin has a lot of power, right? I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. The bezdin has a lot of power. It used to be we could put people to death. We could give makos. I mean, you know, we yearn for those good old days. We still have, you know, a little bit of power that we can issue psalkim, we can issue a decision that can be enforceable as an arbitration decision. We can issue ecclesiastical orders of contempt and things of that sort that people sometimes take seriously. So Bezdin is considered to be a body of authority that if they have the loan documents, so they can go after the assets. They can go after the assets of the borrower. So it's considered on some level as if the debt has already been gavoy, as if the debt has already been collected. So if the debt has already been collected, so there's no loan, there's no outstanding loan to cancel. If the bezdin can just go after the property of the debtor and collect the money right away, a private citizen doesn't have the ability to do that. It's only the bezdin, only the rabbinical court that has that type of enforcement power. So therefore, when it's given over to the bezdin has that authority and that power. That's why the Gemara says that's an explanation. That's why the Rosh Mishantz, who is a commentator to the Mishnah, says that this is the explanation as to why it is that the Gemara says that you can only write prusbul if the borrower has karka, if the borrower has real estate. Why should it matter that the borrower has real estate? So Rashi says, Well, because of this takana that Hillel made, when Hillel made this rabbinic enactment can only be made if it's a milsa d'shchicha, if it's a situation which is common. So most loans, lenders would not be interested in extending loans unless the borrower had collateral. So only if the borrower had physical real estate would that be a common situation. And therefore, Hillel only established Puzbol in a situation which was common, namely where a borrower would have real estate. The bar karka wouldn't have real estate, milsed lo shchicha, and therefore Hillel would not have made the takana. However, the Rosh Mishans explains, no, you need for the borrower to have real estate so that there is the possibility of it being able to collect the loan by the Beis Din right away. So it's considered as if it's gavoy. It wouldn't be considered like the Beis Din has collected the loan by virtue of having the loan documents if the lender would not have real estate, would not have collateral of the borrower that the Beis Din would be able to collect so that the loan can be considered as if it was gavoy, like it was already collected. So that's why you need to have the real estate. So what did Hillel do? So, all right, we already have a principle in that the most shtaros of the Beis Din works. If you give over the shtaros, you give over the loan document, so it's going to work. So what did Hillel accomplish? So what Hillel accomplished was that he said, let's say that you don't have loan documents. Let's say you don't have loan documents because the loan was a milbal pet. There was no document. It wasn't documented altogether. Or, for example, there are different types of obligations that even though they didn't start out as a loan, they eventually turn into a loan. Like a person might come to the end of the Shemitah year and say, I'm not a big lender. I don't know. Maybe I loan some money to a good friend. I gave them $10 because they were short of cash and they needed to buy themselves a coffee or something. And if they don't pay me back, so I don't care if they don't pay me back. I don't need to execute a puzbol. But the truth is, there were all kinds of debt. There were all kinds of obligations that turn into debt. What we call zakvon alav b'milveh. Like, for example, there's a shop debt. A person owns a store and a customer didn't yet pay for the goods. So if they didn't pay on time, so every single day that the obligation is past due, we say that it has effectively turned into a loan and therefore it will be canceled at the end of the Shemitah year. Or you have wages that are owed by somebody who did work and the person didn't get paid yet. So if they didn't get paid on time, so every passing day afterwards is considered like it was converted into a loan. Or you have a tenant that didn't yet pay rent for a tenancy situation. So therefore, every day that it's outstanding, it's turned into a loan. So you have any kind of obligation that is past due is going to be considered a loan, and it's therefore going to be canceled at the end of Shemitah year. So Hillel said, even if that obligation was never evidenced in writing, whether it was a loan or something else, it's considered like it was handed over to the Beis Din. Secondly, let's say that you have loan documents, but the loan documents are not so accessible. The loan documents are not so available. They're in a bunch of different places. It's hard to gather together all of your loan documents and give it over to the Beis Din. So Hillel established that even if the person just makes the verbal declaration in front of the Beis Din that they're giving over the loan documents, that verbal declaration is going to be good enough. So this was the takana of Hillel. So that's the idea of Puzbol. What a funny word, Puzbol. What is that? Where's that word come from, Puzbol? So the Chidushei Anshei Shem on Mishnayos says that Puzbol comes from the word Puzbulibuti. Okay, good. So that explains it. Where does the word Puzbulibuti come from? So he says that was in Greece. In Greece, that was the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce that would make all kinds of economic regulations in ancient Greece was called the Puzbulibuti, based on some sort of Greek word or whatever. And therefore, they utilized that term, Puzbulibuti, because it stood for the idea of doing something for society that helps to ensure the smooth economic welfare of the society. And that's the same thing that Hillel accomplished as well. It's just that in Aramaic, the words mean different things, but they appropriated that term, Puzbulibuti, and used Aramaic terms to apply it in a more halakhic sense. So Prus, from an Aramaic perspective, means Prusa de Milsa, means like a Prus prize. It's a prize, a door prize. There's something really good for everybody. It's a Prus. You say, wow, a Prus, that's great. You know, I'm going to go for that. And bull is for rich people. So we find that bull, like bull market, right? Bull market. So it's for rich people. So it's a takana. It's like a prize for the rich people, that the rich people are saved from number one, violating an aveira, because they wouldn't want to extend loans otherwise. That would be an aveira from the Torah. And number two, they'll be able to collect their loans. So therefore, it's good for the bully. And it's also good for the booty. Who are the booty? The booty are the poor people. They're the poor people, the booty, because the rich people pick up the booty of the poor people. I don't know. So the booty says the various sources that indicate the booty stands for the poor people. So the poor people also get a boon, because the rich people would not have wanted to extend the loan to them otherwise. But because of the fact that Hillel enacted this principle, so now the poor people are going to get loans. So therefore, it's good for the rich people. It's good for the poor people. It's good for everybody. Pus bully booty. And in short, we call it prusbul. This aveira that a lender would otherwise violate by not wanting to extend a loan because it would be canceled by the Shemitah year, is that an aveira min HaTorah min Rabbanan. Nowadays we say that the Shemitah's ksav from the cancellation of loans is only rabbinic. It's not from the Torah. So the Sefer Pasah Shulchan says that the aveira itself, though, would still be a Torah aveira. It would still be a Torah violation. Because whenever there is the cancellation of loans, it doesn't matter whether it's something which is effective according to the Torah or something which is effectuated by the Chachamim. Once there is such a cancellation of loans and the lender, based on that, refrains from extending a loan, so that refraining from extending a loan, that hesitation in terms of providing a loan to somebody because you're afraid that the loan will be canceled, it doesn't matter whether it will be canceled in a Torah midrabanan, but that act of hesitation is going to be a Torah violation. So that's what he says. Others disagree. Minchas Chinuch seems to assume it would only be a rabbinic violation nowadays. Others, but Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach thought that argument made a lot of sense. He thought it made a lot of sense that it would be a Torah. So the Prusbul really saves people from a Torah violation. So Rabbi Trump mentioned that there was a question that some people raised. Oh, Shemitah year. So they started to make phone calls before Rosh Hashanah of this past year saying, oh, we have to execute a Shemitah. We have to execute a Prusbul for the Shemitah year. So is there any basis for that whatsoever? So the Rabbeinu Asher, the Rosh, says there is some basis, because the Rosh brings an opinion that the prohibition of lo yigos, of not pestering a borrower for repayment of the loan, that prohibition goes into effect at the very beginning of the Shemitah year. That the loan is not canceled until the end of the Shemitah year. Mikei Sheva Shanim Taseh Shemitah, but the prohibition of badgering the borrower for repayment of the loan, that prohibition goes into effect at the beginning of the Shemitah year. So in order to be allowed to badger, to go after the borrower for repayment of the loan during the Shemitah year, one would have to execute a prusbul beforehand. So there are some in the Chabad community. In the Chabad community, they actually filed this motion. I got a call before Rosh Hashanah from somebody who runs a congregation here in the New York area, saying, can I please have the prusbul forms? I said, you're in a year early. You're a year early. It's not time yet for the prusbul forms. The person said, no, what are you talking about? It says Shemitah year. You got to do it right now. And I tried to explain to them, that's not our practice. I said, oh, you want to be machmir for the rush? They never heard of the rush. They didn't know what I was talking about. I said, is that your stringency? Are you Chabad? The person wasn't Chabad. They didn't believe me. They said, okay, I'll find a different bezin. They didn't believe me. I said, I think you'll get the same response for the other, but they did. I said, no, go check your records. You don't remember how you did it last time. And okay. But that's the general practice. It's not like the rush, but there is such a shita like the rush. Now the reason we wait until the very end of the Shemitah year to exercise the prusbul is because the prusbul only covers past loans. It only covers loans that had already been extended. But if a person executes a prusbul, then the next day they extend the loan, or the next day somebody owes them something that doesn't get paid right away, so the prusbul is not going to cover those debts. So that's why the general practice is not to sign it today. You could sign it today. It's better than not signing it at all. But to wait until the last possible minute, or often there'll be prusbul signings either on an Erev Rosh Hashanah, a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah, 1 week before Rosh Hashanah. There is a chumra, there's an interesting stringency of the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai says that as a way of commemorating this idea of the cancellation of loans after a person has executed a prusbul, they should then extend like a little loan to somebody. They make a loan to their neighbor or something, here's $5, with the expectation that they're never going to collect the loan. And this way, they can be Mekayim, they can fulfill on some level this idea of Shamot, that there'll be some loan that they're going to cancel. So there is such a practice. The Nitzei Gabriel wrote in his sefer on Shemitah's Ksafim, Gabriel Tzinner wrote about this practice, but he said that Rav Shmuel Vozner, Zatzal, at the time was he was consulting with, said, you got to tell people this is only a Midas Chasidus. Like, this is not something that you absolutely have to do. And I could come up with explanations as to why it's really not such a big deal to do this. Because, number one, maybe it will lead to a mistake that you'll extend a little loan, and then the lender might come to actually collect it and violate the whole point over here, which is of Shemitah's Ksafim. So maybe it's not, you know, such a good idea. Secondly, we paskin against the Sefer Yoreim. We hold that it's an Afkata Demalka. The loan is canceled by itself, so it's not a mitzvah that you are performing per se in terms of canceling the loan. So you say, no, but this way you get to perform Vized Dvar HaShmita. When the borrower comes to repay the loan, you'll say Meshameh Tani, so you'll fulfill that. So we saw from the Gemara, that doesn't always work out so well. Maybe the borrower will forget to say Afal Pike, and it's going to lead to bad feelings. And thirdly, if the whole idea is to remember the institution of Shemitah, that we're doing this so that the institution of Shemitah's Ksafim should not be forgotten. So the commentator, the Tumim, of Yonasan Eibeshitz, he says, that's why we do Prusbol. We do Prusbol, so that the whole institution of Shemitah's Ksafim, of the cancellation of loans, won't be forgotten. That we have an Av Shemilsa, that we make a big deal, a whole big ceremony. You put up signs, you have guest speakers come in and give shiurim and so forth. So this creates the whole big public atmosphere and commotion that everyone is reminded of this idea of the cancellation of loans. You do the principle, so that's good enough. This answers another question that the Ritva asked. The Ritva asked the question at the beginning of Maseches Makos, that the Gemara at the beginning of Makos has the following idea. The Gemara says that when a lender extends a loan and he doesn't want the loan to be canceled at the end of Shemitah, so the lender might want to make a condition and say, Amanash lo tishmeteni shviyas. You could generally make monetary conditions. So the lender might say, I'm going to extend the loan, but you know what? I don't want Shemitah to cancel this loan. So the Gemara asks, is that a valid tonight? Is that a valid condition? Or I say, on condition, the Shemitah, you won't cancel the loan. So the Gemara says, absolutely not. You can't be masna mashikosu b'torah. You can't make a condition that you're going to repudiate. You're going to abrogate a mitzvah of the Torah. The Torah says the loan's going to be canceled. I can't make a condition say there's no cancellation. Of course, there's a cancellation of the loan, whether you like it or not. But the Gemara says, if you add one letter, just one letter to that condition, everything is hunky-dory. Everything is perfectly fine. What's the letter? What possible letter? Is this like a letter of exemption? What kind of a letter? So the letter base. Oh, letter base is very powerful. Instead of saying, Amanash lo tishmeteni shvius, it was the first letter in the Torah, right? You say, Amanash lo tishmeteni b'shvius. When the seventh year comes to an end, so even though, according to the Torah, there's going to be a cancellation of loans, between the two of us, Bishvias, you're going to decide that you're going to pay me back anyway. It's just a condition between the two of us. It's not a condition of the Torah. I'm not saying the Shvias year is not going to cancel. Yeah, the Shvias year is not going to cancel loan. But when that happens, Bishvias, when that occurs, you agree that you're going to pay me anyway. The Rambam explains that one person can be mischai of himself or herself. One person can obligate themselves to pay money to another person, even if they're not obligated to pay. I can be mischai of myself. I'm going to give you a matan of $1 million. According to Torah law, that works, even without consideration. Not like secular law. Even if there's no consideration, you don't have to say, for good and valuable consideration, the receipt and sufficiency of which here is hereby acknowledged by both parties. You don't have to say that. You just say, okay, I am obligating myself to pay the money, and that becomes an enforceable obligation according to the Torah. So, therefore, one can make the condition, Amanash lo tishmeteni b'shvias, then the borrower is obligated to repay, not as a loan, but because the borrower has accepted upon himself or herself to repay the amount as a monetary obligation, as a monetary gift, an obligation that will be paid to the lender at the end of the Shemitah year. Rabbi Yoshev has a chiddush. He says that when a borrower does repay a loan as a matana, as a gift, as opposed to repaying the actual loan, because the loan has been canceled by the Shemitah year, so when it's being repaid as a gift. So then, because it's not a repayment of a loan, it's a new gift, so a person is going to have to pay Maisik Sofim. The person, normally, if I extend a loan and I get repaid, I don't have to pay. I already had earned the money, so I don't have to pay Tztaka on that repayment of the loan. But if I'm getting money back after the Shemitah year, because the borrower says, I'm giving it to you afal pikein as a matano, or because there was a condition, amanashlo tishpeteti b'shvias, so then the person's going to have to pay my six up, and that's a big chiddush. That's a big chiddush. So that's another good advantage when you execute the prosbul. So then you're just getting a repayment of the loan, so then you don't have to pay my six up. So, you know, another boon. So the Ritva asked the question, why doesn't every single lender just make the condition, amanashlo tishmeteni b'shvias, when they extend the loan? There was the Rosh was very upset because he discovered in his times that people were not observing Shemitah's Ksafim, that they weren't concerned about the cancellation of loans, they weren't executing a prosbul. He said, all these loans are getting canceled, everybody's collecting their loans, and nobody's doing a prosbul. So he got really, really upset about it. So he suggested that it could be that maybe in those places, in those communities where they had the custom not to worry about it and not to execute a prosbul, there was a built-in condition. In every single loan, there was a built-in condition of amanash lo tishmeteni b'shvias, that it was understood that that was the condition between the parties, that between the two of them, the borrower and the lender, there was an agreement. The borrower would pay back anyway, even though the borrower wasn't obligated, and it would be kind of a matana, a gift obligation towards the lender. But we don't have such a built-in condition nowadays, so a person can't rely upon it. So the Ritva says, why do a prosbul? Why not just explicitly write in every single contract up an amanash lo tishmeteni b'shvias? So he gives three answers. The Ritva gives three answers. The Ritva and Daf Gimel beginning in Maseches Makos. Ritva says, answer number one, sometimes a lender is going to forget to put in that condition. Sometimes the lender will forget. You know, you have your loan documents. It's not part of the boilerplate, per se. Number two, if the lender says to the borrower, let's say that the lender extends the loan the first year of the Shemitah cycle, and the loan is supposed to get paid 30 days later, right? So the lender doesn't want to broadcast from the very outset that they expect the borrower to be a deadbeat borrower, to say, I don't really expect to get paid back for the next 6 years. So therefore, I'm going to write, amanash lo tishmeteni b'shvias. The borrower will say, oh, I got plenty of time. He obviously doesn't expect me to pay back before the Shemitah year, so I'm not going to pay back right away. So that's a pretty good reason. And then the third reason that the Ritva gives is kedesh lo tishtacheach Torah Shvias, that we do the principle in order to have this public ceremony and all of this commotion, and all this excitement at the end of the Shemitah year, that everybody is reminded about this concept of Shemitah's Ksafim, of the cancellation of loans, and the way to best accomplish that is to have everybody perform a prosbul. How concerned are we? Question, yes.
If this is a schayvus, if somebody says I'm being schayv myself, you know, wouldn't that be a form of a new halva anyway? Can I go to
Beis Din
and say you have an obligation?
Hiskaivus is not a hovah. Particularly if the Hiskaivus doesn't kick in until after the Shemitah year. There's a machlokas in the Gemara. There are two deos, two lashonos, as to, let's say I have a loan. There's a loan that's outstanding that a person owes me, but that loan is not payable until doesn't become due and payable until after the Shemitah year is over. It's a 10-year loan, and it's not payable until after the Shemitah year is over. So according to the Lishna Basra, according to the second version in the Gemara, Shemitah does not cancel that loan. That loan does not become canceled. The Shemitah only cancels loans that become due and payable before. And so that's why it's recommended, if you do extend the loan, not because of the Ben Ish Chai, you extend the loan because you just have to extend the loan after you execute a prosbul, so then you should stipulate with the borrower that the loan is not going to be payable until Tzom Gedalia. So if you stipulate it's not going to be payable until Tzom Gedalia, it's not going to be canceled by the Shemitah year. So here too, this is Skyvus. The person is taking upon themselves an obligation to pay something after the Shemitah year is over. So it doesn't become due and payable beforehand. So it wouldn't be a problem. So we paskin like that, Lushin. We paskin like that opinion.
And yeah. would there be, if someone did this to a loan and we're really saying there's no more loan, it says a new Skyvus, then would Ribbis be an issue? Theoretically, a person could pay back extra and not have an issue with Ribbis because it's not a loan, it's a matana. Right, I could borrow money from you and pay you back afterwards as a matana. There's no loan.
You could do it anytime. If a person didn't make a prosbul and a borrower really, like let's say it was a non-from person who extended a loan to you, and the person doesn't know to say meshametani if you're going to pay them back, and they wouldn't even know not to go after you for the money, so you feel bad. The person didn't execute a prosbul; they're going to violate an avera, so you preempt them. You preempt them. You still show up at their door before they're going to ask for the money, and you say, I want to give you a matana. You should understand that really, in theory, the Shemitah year canceled this law, and the person will say, Shemitah year? What's that? What are you talking about? However, nonetheless, I'm giving this to you as a matana, as a gift. And the person says, oh, okay, good. Just give me the money. Okay, but that works. The fact that you say that, so that makes it, and that makes it better. So that would make that. That's what the post can recommend that a person should do. So how do you go about? We're getting to towards the end of the time. So let me just go over the forms a little bit that you have in front of you.
Right, yeah. So when do I give the money back to Beis Din? Because I'm collecting on behalf of Beis Din.
You don't have to give the money to Beis Din because
how does that work?
Because Beis Din, the way that works is that even though technically speaking you're the one who still gets to keep the money, it's considered like the Beis Din is holding it for you. The Beis Din is holding it on your behalf. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter because once it's in the hands of Beis Din, either it's considered like it's already collected. It's considered like it's already collected, even though you get the money. Or it's considered as if since Beis Din is holding the document, even though it's on your behalf, so therefore the repayment obligation is between the borrower and the Beis Din. It's true, you're a beneficiary. It doesn't, your holding of the loan, you know, doesn't go away entirely. But it's just that Beis Din is serving basically as the front man for your loan, and therefore it's out of the category of achicha. Either it's out of the category of achicha, that's what the Sifrei says, or it's considered as if it's already collected. But either way, you get the benefit, you get the money. There is a form. The Ria Bartzaloni has the form that's quoted in the Darchei Moshe by the Rama in his commentary Darchei Moshe on the Torah, which says instead of the lashon from the Gemara. It says, I'm giving over my loans to Beis Din she'egbenu kol zman she'erza, that I will get to collect anytime that I want. So instead of it saying she'egbenu kol zman she'erza, he has the lashon, he has a formulation, Beis Din will collect it. And if Beis Din is too busy and they don't get around to collecting it, so then I will have the right to collect it on their behalf. So he sort of spells it out much more explicitly. But others say you don't even need that. You don't need to bother Beis Din to collect the loan. You have the right to collect the loan since theoretically it's already in the hands of Beis Din due to this principle device. That's the way that it works. Yeah. So there's a question. Do you have to actually go in front of the Beis Din? Do you have to actually go in front of the Beis Din? So wait, I have my own source sheets here. But I don't think I have what I sent. Okay, just give me a copy. I can read in front of what you all have. Okay, so there are two different principle forms. There's Form A and Form B. Form A is that you actually appear before a Beis Din. The issue with that form is that there's an opinion in the Gemara, the opinion of Shmuel, that it has to be a Beis Din like Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi. It has to be like incredibly powerful Beis Din that had broad sweeping powers like in the days of the Amoraim. So if you don't have a Beis Din of that type of prestige, so you really can't just go in front of three people and like Hataris Nedarim and say, I'm just appointing any three people to be a Beis Din. It has to be like Rabbeinu Tam rules. It has to be a Beis Din Choshev. It has to be a very important Beis Din. So some people say, well, I don't necessarily have. A Beis Din Choshev means like it's the official community Beis Din. Like, okay, you know, you could say here we have the Beis Din of America. In Chicago, we have the Chicago Rabbinical Council. Oh, we're not Beis Din Choshev like Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi, but we're the local, you know, contemporary, important Beis Din for the community. So the Mechaber paskins like that opinion. The Rama paskins like the Rosh, who says, no, that the Gemara indicates that even just the Talmidim who learned in the Beis Medrash of Rav Ashi, they did their own principle. It could be any three people. It doesn't have to be a Beis Din Choshev. So that's a machlokus. Whether you need a Beis Din Choshev or not. So those who want to be stringent, then you need a Beis Din Choshev, so there's another possible option. What's that option? Then instead of going in front of a Beis Din, you go in front of witnesses. You go in front of two witnesses, and you say, I'm hereby handing over my debts to a Beis Din Choshev, even though the Beis Din Choshev is very far away. How is it that you're allowed to do that? It's based on your Talmud Yerushalmi. The passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi quotes Rabbi Cheskia, this is one of these cryptic Talmudic passages. Even, it's talking about a prosbul, even if they're in Rome. Even if, who's in Rome? So here you have a major dispute between Talmudic authorities that some say, oh, well, even if they're in Rome is referring to the loan documents. Even if your loan documents are sitting in a Swiss bank account or they're somewhere in Rome, and you're not able to physically hand them over to the Beis Din, that's the whole idea of principle, that you can still say, I'm handing over my loans to the Beis Din, despite the fact that you're not physically handing over the loan documents. That's how the Ran learns the Gemara. So according to the Ran, who learns the Talmud Yerushalmi that way, so you don't have a basis to say that you could do anything different than what we've been describing up until now. But according to the Mordechai, Mordechai says, you know who's in Rome? Who's in Rome? The Beis Din is in Rome. What in the world is the Beis Din doing in Rome? I have no idea. It might be like a Jewish Federation trip or whatever. They're in Rome. So you have the Beis Din is in Rome, and therefore you can't make the principal recitation in front of the Beis Din. So the Talmud Yerushalmi is indicating you could do it in front of witnesses. You can just go in front of witnesses and say, I'm hereby handing over all of my loans to the Beis Din that happens to be sitting in Rome. So according to that interpretation, one could go in front of witnesses. The Ramah certainly says that that would be sufficient. The Ramah assumes like that opinion. The Mechaber, not entirely clear. The Mechaber does talk about witnesses, but it might be in the Gemara sense that you have a Beis Din in the room and you pick two people to be witnesses to sign that you handed over the debts in front of the Beis Din. Not entirely clear. But there are many authorities who say that since it's not clear and it's only rabbinic anyway, so even if you're a Sephardi, you're better off, since the Mechaber definitely says you need a Beis Din Chashuv, maybe says the witnesses are good enough, so you're better off going in front of witnesses if you're not in front of the Beis Din Chashuv and saying to the witnesses, I'm hereby handing over the loans to the Beis Din. So we have both forms. If you look on the first page, we have it in Hebrew. Look on the second page, we have it in English. So just to be Shavu L'chol Nefesh, I'll read the English form. So the principal form before a Beis Din in English says, in the presence of the undersigned three judges, constituting a Beis Din, appeared the following person, declared, I hereby turn over to you judges, and give the three names of the judges, all the debts owed to me, whether or not the debts are evidenced in writing, as we said, so I may therefore collect these debts at any time that I desire, basically an English translation of the form of the declaration that appears in the Gemara. And we, the undersigned Beis Din, heard the declaration of the above described person, have empowered such person to avoid having his or her debts canceled by Shemitah, and he or she may therefore collect all of his or her debts by virtue of this principle in accordance with the special enactment of Hillel and Chazal. We hereby fix our signatures that should have a date so you know which loans are covered, everything from before that date, even earlier in the day on that date. And alternatively, we have the form of in front of witnesses. In the presence of the undersigned two witnesses, they appear before us blank, who declare before us as follows, be my witnesses that I am submitting all the debts owed to me to the Beis Din of America in New York, comprised of the following judges, Rabbi Mordechai Willig, Rabbi Yonah Reis, who's sometimes in New York, and Rabbi Shlomo Weissman, so that I may therefore collect these debts at any time that I desire. And person, just make sure to fill out, if they fill out the form before the witnesses, so then it's encouraged that they should mail in the form to the Beis Din, because there are opinions that say that at least the Beis Din needs to know about it. If we're going to serve as the person, as the entity that is holding the loans on some level, so it's good for us to be informed of the fact that we're holding the loans, so therefore it gets mailed into the Beis Din. So what we try to do, at least in Chicago, we have three different dates in which we're close to Rosh Hashanah, in which we're convening at different locations to have actual members, actual dayanim of the Chicago Rabbinical Council, meet with parties who come in, and they sign the principal forms directly in our presence. And this way we satisfy, hopefully, all opinions of being the Beis Din, hopefully somewhat, you know, chashiv in the sense that we're the official Beis Din in of the city. I mean, we're not like really, really chashiv, but, you know, whatever, you do your best. Also, you don't have to rely upon this leniency of witnesses. You just go in front of the Beis Din. But either way, however you get it done, it's important to get done. What about the concern that the enactment was only made if the borrower has karka, that the borrower has real estate? So with respect to that issue, nowadays, we generally assume that everybody owns real estate because you don't have to actually own the real estate. The Gemara says even if it's just real estate that you're borrowing, and the Beis Yosef says certainly if it's real estate that you're renting, that would be good enough. So everybody's living in some sort of real estate, so either you own it or you rent it or you're borrowing it from somebody. We don't have that many homeless people. If a person is actually homeless, so then it could be a possible issue. The Ksam Sofer says that it's an issue with respect to itinerant travelers that just are constantly going from wandering Jews, going from place to place and just finding lodging here, lodging there. Much more common in Europe that you had that sort of thing. They might not actually have any real estate. Even wherever they stay for the night, the person can just throw them out. So therefore, in those cases, if the lender knows that such individuals owe the lender money, so then what the lender does is that the lender transfers through a kinyan, they pick up a handkerchief, they transfer some unspecified land that they have. Say, I'm giving a small parcel of land on a temporary basis, at least until after Rosh Hashanah, to this individual. So the individual, the borrower in question, will be considered like they actually have a right to a certain parcel of land, and as a result, they're going to owe me money. So that's based on the principle of Zach on the other, Mishlo Bifanav, you can give a gift to somebody without their being present, even though it turns out not being so much in their benefit, because it of course is them, but it's a sechus that leads to a chov. So the Ran says, we see from here that you can give somebody something that's a sechus, even though it's going to lead to be a chov later on. Another say, no, it's just a special leniency that we have in the world of Prizbal. You wouldn't be allowed to do this in other contexts. And some say this applies to children who are living in their parents' home, because Rabbi Yosef says, and others, because they don't really have any rights. It's the parents that pay the mortgage. The parents can kick them out whenever they want and misbehaving, whatever, you know, sleep in the street for the night. So therefore, with respect to Bachrim and Bachuros who live in their parents' homes or live in a yeshiva dormitory or something like that, that's not considered to be necessarily that they have a right to the real estate. And therefore, if they're the borrowers, you should give them some real estate in order to avoid this problem. The Chassam Sofer says, not a big deal altogether, because nowadays people don't rely so much on the real estate. They rely more on metaltolin. They rely more, if they're going to collect from somebody, more on their movable assets. Everybody has movable possessions. So therefore, you don't get so worked up about it. Also, even if the borrower doesn't have real estate, but there are others who owe the borrower money, and those people have real estate, that's good enough. So most people have money in the bank, and the bank owns plenty of real estate. So therefore, for those reasons, we're not so worried about the karka issue, but if you know that there are people who owe you money who are like children living in their parents' homes, all right, so maybe there's room when you do the principal to have the Bezdin be maknet to transfer some karka, some land that you owe that you own to the borrowers. So that's the basic long and short of it. We've sort of, you know, I've taken up a lot of time, but if we want to stay for another few minutes and ask some questions, I'm happy to stay around. Yes.
Does like the father of the household cover everyone in the family? Or?
No. So the poskim talk about this, and women also are obligated in this because it's not a mitzvah esei shehazman groma. Since once the loan is canceled, it's canceled forever. And also there's a lo saseh of lo yigos that goes along with it. So therefore, based on these considerations, women also have to execute a principal. If they're an unmarried woman, so for sure they have to execute. But if they're a married woman, married women tend nowadays to have like their own possessions as well. You know, they don't necessarily tell their husbands everything. And also, they might, you know, have money in pensions. They might have separate bank accounts, you know, that would really be their own money. Therefore, if they extend the loans or people owe them money, whether it's a bank or another entity, or a Jewish bank or another entity that owes them money, so they should really cover themselves with Prizbal as well. What the husband could do, if the wife is at home preparing, you know, the meals for Rosh Hashanah or something, and the husband is the one who appears before the Bezdin after davening Shacharis and Erev Rosh Hashanah, the husband can say, I'm also serving as an agent for my wife. There's a little bit of discussion. Can you assign agency in terms of the execution of a prizbal? There's an opinion of the Ma'ari Kash who says, no, mili lo mimisar l'shliach is just words and that can't be given over to an agent. And others say, no, you can give words over to an agent if the words themselves are going to accomplish the final act. So then that's considered to be perfectly acceptable. We generally rely upon that opinion. Yeah, okay.
What about the children?
Yeah, children also, it doesn't matter. Even the loans of children, even if they would be 8 years old and they extended a loan, the loans would be canceled for Shemitah because it's Hafkata Demalka. They don't have to be bar mitzvah. So all the loans would be canceled. So everybody has to execute a principal.
So I just want to verify, if I wrote a contract in Shemitah, but the agreement in the contract says that they pay me back in December this year, which is after Shemitah's over.
Yeah.
Do I need a puzzle?
No, but it's a good idea for everybody to do a puzzle anyway, because you never know. There might be some sort of a debt out there you're not even thinking about that's owed to you that's been considered halakhically like it was converted into a loan. So therefore, to be on the safe side, it's a good idea for everybody to do a puzzle. Also, when you do a puzzle, as we said, it also accomplishes this idea of Zekel Shvias. It creates this Shemitah awareness, which is also one of the goals of having the puzzle executed. Yes?
If we're representing our wives, do we have to put it in the principal?
No, you could just say that verbally in front of the bezdin. Because you have the written contract anyway. I mean, the principle of ishto kegufo, has, some application in this context. Though it's almost like presumed, of course, a husband is representing his wife. But it's good to say it.
But should you specify with your wife? You have to specify with your wife that you become her agent.
Yeah, but even if you didn't, we say zach on the adam that you could do it. Even it's good to have it, a conversation about it. But if you didn't, it would still be good anyway. Yeah.
Is there any practical difference between the Bayan and Rava, whether you say it was based on Sheba or
according to Rashi, there's a major practical difference. We don't have time to get into all the lumness of the sugya. But according to Rashi, when Rava said, Hefker Bez and Hefker, he wasn't only answering the question of how could we declare that the loans will be canceled with Bizman Azeh. He was also answering the previous question. The earlier question of the Gemara was, how could Hillel establish a principle? And the Gemara answered, because Shemitah's Ksafim nowadays is only Midrabanan, so therefore he made a rabbinic enactment. And then later on, after the second question of how do we have a cancellation of loans altogether nowadays, so you had a Bayi and Rav who gave their different answers, and Rav said Hefker Bez and Hefker. So Rashi says, when Rav said Hefker Bez and Hefker, that's going on the first question too. That's going on the explanation of how is it that Hillel was allowed to enact a principle because of Hefker Bez and Hefker. So Rashi's saying basically that even if principle would be, even if Shemitah's Ksafim would be Daraisa, even if the cancellation of loans nowadays would be Daraisa, Hefker Bez and Hefker is so powerful that it would enable the lender to collect the loan anyway, based on Hefker Bez and Hefker. But that assumes an understanding of Hefker Bez and Hefker, that Hefker Bez and Hefker not only gives the Chachamim, the Bezdin, the power to relinquish possession of money from somebody, but also the power to transfer money to somebody else, which is a big machlokas achronim, and the Machne Ephraim says that we don't hold that way, and therefore we hold, not like Rashi, but rather like Tosfos, that the answer of Hefker Bez and Hefker only is an answer to the second question, not the first question. The first question of how can you make a principle is only and solely based on the fact that the Shemitah's Ksafim nowadays is Derabanan, not Deraisa. Okay? You got a little lumbus out of it. Yeah.
The two witnesses on Form B, do they have to be, Shomer Torah, Mitzvos, not related to each other, not related to you? Could women be witnesses?
This is an excellent question. The witnesses have to be valid Torah witnesses, which means that they have to be two adult males who are Shomer Shabbos, who are not related to each other. Not only that, but because they're witnesses for this transaction, they can't be related to the malveh, to the lender, and they can't be related to any of the borrowers. If they know that, there's a borrower that happens to be their child or something like that, they really shouldn't serve as the witnesses. The Bezdin itself are not allowed to be related to each other, but most poskim say it's okay if the Bezdin is related to the Malva, related to the Lova, because they're just receiving an assignment of loans. But witnesses are more strict in that sense. It's really an excellent question in the sense that the witnesses can't be related to the Malva or the Lova either. So it's a really good question.
Yes.
I'm sorry? Well, you know about the lender, because the lender's standing in front of you. You don't necessarily know about the borrower, but you might know if the lender is somebody who is like a close friend of the family, and you know that this lender did a big favor for your, for your son and daughter-in-law, whatever, that they extend like a $50,000 loan to enable them to, buy their house or something. So then you know that you should stay away. Right? What? If you don't know, so you can follow Chazaka. What are the chances that you're related to one of the borrowers?
Isn't there a whole issue? If you have to make sure the witness, you got to tell the customer, just these two witnesses, because of anybody else.
You don't have to worry about that it's going to pass on the principle because of all the other people in the room. Because the witnesses are only people who actually sign on the document. If like other people in the room decide like signing the document as well, so you stop it. Wait, no! Don't you all sign. You just need to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. So maybe what we'll do now is we'll conclude, and if anybody has any additional questions, you can ask me afterwards or email me or call me or whatever. Okay.
And I would like to also say that in reference to Risa's comments, we're going to set up times closer. We're 3 weeks away from Rosh Hashanah. So closer to the time, we will be setting up specific times. We will be using the Based on America's form to do the principle and execute it so that we make sure that the community is able to do this as close as possible to Rosh Hashanah.
No, we'll do Adam.